Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Don't Go In There podcast. I'm Bill Reed, joined as always by your hostess with the mostest, Ashley Ernie. And this week, we will be covering The Legend of the Vampire.
It's going to get vampy. No? Okay. Anyways, check us out on social media. Instagram, don't_go_in_there. Twitter is don't_go_in_there3. We have a Facebook page and group. Check it out. It's called Don't Go In There. And then email us your vampire stories, your true crime, your paranormal, your hometowns, whatever you want to. don'tgointhere19@gmail.com.
Usually, Ash, this is where I would tell everybody to check us out on the Podbean network, but
we switched.
We are trying a different recording platform called Anchor. So if you guys can check us out on there, let us know how we sound as well. We were having some troubles and we weren't sure if it was Podbean or my internet. And as Ash, I got some other news, I got a new router. So woo! I haven't been losing internet connection in my bedroom. So
that's exciting.
I'm stepping on up.
Getting fancy. So if
you could do us a huge favor, please email us or just leave us a review on iTunes or wherever else. And just let us know how we sound on this episode. We would really like to know how you guys are listening to us and how we sound to you. And if you subscribe on your platforms, you will always be updated on your new episodes from us as well.
Yes, guys. And also check out, we do have a Patreon. It has three different levels, $3 and $5. Each level gets you different things. So go over and check it out if you want to financially support us. This just helps Bill keep his fancy new router and other things that this podcast does cost. So we want to keep doing it for you, but it's a hobby for us. So if you want to keep hearing episodes, we would love if you could support us in that way. If not, we would love if you could support us by giving us a 5-star review and a little comment review on iTunes.
That sounds great to me. I hope everybody, you know, supports it financially. Maybe I can keep in this quarantine that we're in and just sit here and make podcasts with Ashley the whole time.
There you go. Everybody's entertained.
So, Ash, since at the business side of things, what do you say? Let's go in there.
Let's go.
So a few sources that I used for this episode are history.com, which I used for the werewolf episode. And it's just kind of weird getting it from like history to, you know, they're known for doing a lot of like factual stuff.
History.
They had some good stuff on there. Of course, vampires.com. And actually, they didn't even have all that much information that I could use. HowStuffWorks.com. That was an interesting one. And then vampirefacts.com. So if you guys get a chance to go check out. What's that?
Okay, be honest. Did you watch any of the Twilights for any of your research?
I did not. I watched one Twilight many years ago when I was, you know, dating a girl. No, not Anne. So
just had the chat.
Got to earn those brownie points, you know?
Yeah.
So the first thing we're going to talk about is what exactly is a vampire? You know, most of them are described as evil mythological beings that roam the world at night searching for people to feed upon. There are many different characteristics of the vampire throughout different cultures, just like we had with the werewolf, but obviously this is with the vampire. But the most common thing is with all the vampires throughout the culture is their thirst for blood. According to most cultures, the vampire drains their victims of blood with fangs, killing them, and then turning them into vampires. So that's like the one that we're most common, like that we know of. Just like you said, the Twilight series. They kill them in a sense of they're no longer mortal humans. They become vampires. So, and then they're also able to seduce their victims through like a hypnotic power. And I've seen that in a few movies. I don't know about all movies, but a lot of these characteristics that we're familiar with actually come from Hollywood, not the actual, cultures of like the Middle Ages and even before that in some Asian cultures.
Well, yeah, because Hollywood kind of like romanticized vampires.
Especially most recently they have, just like you use the Twilight series, but you got movies like Dracula, Nosferatu.
Hotel Transylvania.
I don't know if you've ever seen the Scooby-Doo where they go to the all-girls boarding school they're all monsters. That's a good one. Lost my spot. Generally speaking, the vampires tend to hunt at night due to the sunlight weakening their powers. Again, that is something that we learned through modern vampires. We'll learn later that that's actually not true for the actual like vampire legend that came before that. There are even stories of vampires having the power to morph into a bat or a wolf. And that's where actually I think a lot of the crossover from vampire to werewolf happens, because they are able to transform, into a bat or a wolf, making people think, hey, that's a werewolf. That's a person, because a vampire looks like a person. It transfers into a werewolf or just a wolf.
Now, I knew they were known for like being shapeshifters. I just didn't know they were only into those two things. I thought they could do anything.
Well, they might be able to.
My references is movies.
But this was the only two I could find. So, yeah. I mean, who knows? Another pretty well-known characteristic is the vampire cannot see them in a mirror or cast a shadow. And again, we're going to beat it over the head again with a bat. This is something that is seen in Hollywood, not so much in the actual legends of the vampire of yesteryear, So.
Yeah.
So now that we know what a vampire is, let's go into what creates a vampire. Just like everything else, each culture, each movie, each TV series has its own way to create a vampire. In the Chinese culture, it is believed that the corpse was jumped by an animal, especially that of a dog or a cat, and that corpse would turn into a vampire, or is what they called, the undead. So literally, when I mean jumped by an animal, I mean literally a dog or a cat jumped over a dead body, and that's what would cause it.
Oh, ew. That's interesting.
Yeah. Was not expecting that, but I actually found other cultures that believe that too, in that region. Go ahead.
So that's super interesting.
Yeah. So they also believed if they did not treat the wound, if that, the corpse had a wound to it with boiling water, there was worry that it would become a vampire. So if you died of a fatal wound, or maybe you just had, wounds before you died, if they didn't treat those open wounds with boiling water, they were scared that you would become a vampire.
That's interesting that they think that, being that it's on like a corpse, and that it's going to turn into a vampire and not like a zombie.
Yeah, and I wonder if they're thinking like when you put hot water or flame or something hot to a wound and cauterize it, it kind of heals it. I wonder if they're thinking if they don't treat that wound, that's how the spirit or whatever they believe causes a vampire gets into the body.
Yeah, absolutely.
In Russia, they believed that a vampire was created by a person who was a witch or a person that rebelled against the Russian Orthodox Church. So, I mean, I get that because there were, we all know that there was a witch hunt around the world. The church was, and still kind of is, not as much as it was, but the church was a huge, I don't even know how to put it. Like, it was the authority of pretty much every empire there was, especially in the Middle Ages. So if you were rebelling They wanted you to look like an evil person. They didn't want people joining in your rebellion, so they made you out to be either a witch, vampire, even like we found out with the werewolf hunts. So I think that was a way of scaring people into joining other rebellions against the church.
Yeah, for sure.
Then there is the well-known folklore of that the vampire is created by another vampire. Each of these vampires are controlled by the head vampire. So we've seen it in shows and TVs where I guess it's like different generations. You know, there's the we'll just say Dracula is the head one, and then he bites somebody, and then that person bites somebody. In some of these shows, I don't know if it's Van Helsing, but I think there's a movie where if you kill the person, the vampire ahead of the other generations, those generations die. And if I'm wrong, I'm sorry, but I want to say I saw that in the movie.
I could see that making sense. It's kind of like you kill the control, the main power source, and everything else that was kind of living because of that dies.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now that I explained what a vampire is, how to create a vampire, I'm going to teach you, Ash, how to prevent an attack from a vampire.
I definitely need that right now, sitting in quarantine.
Yeah, you never know when a vampire is going to attack. And when they do, they're going to be like, thank God I listened to that episode of Don't Go In There where Bill explained to me how to protect myself.
It comes in handy.
Yeah, and then you're going to email me afterwards, you know, tell me how it went.
Exactly.
But I also hold no responsibility if it doesn't work. I'm going to put that out there. Hashtag not getting sued.
Sex waiver.
Hashtag lawyered. As you can imagine, there are, in times of these stories, people were trying to figure out how to prevent vampires from being created. Burying the dead upside down was a very widespread practice because they believed, you know, the vampires would rise, they would, you know, either dig themselves out, whatever. By burying them upside down, they figured it was hard for them to gain access to the above world.
Okay.
Other cultures. I'm sorry, Ash.
But okay, that makes sense.
Other cultures would place possessions near the graves of loved ones to satisfy the demons from attempting to enter the bodies. I saw a lot of, I think they're called skites. The thing that the death holds. I can't remember what it's called. They would place other things that would occupy the demons from trying to enter the body. So they would just place stuff around the graves.
Almost like something to, like, appease them or distract them.
Exactly. In Europe, however, they would cut the tendons of the deceased, like the tendons in your knees and stuff.
Just so they... dead, but still.
Yeah, so they would just try to immobilize you that way. So even though you turned into one, you couldn't move inside your grave, so you would just stay there. They would also place like things like poppy seeds, millet, or other grains on the ground to occupy the vampire at night, counting the grains.
It's like a chicken. It's like picking up its little grains.
The count from Sesame Street, maybe?
Oh, there you go. That's where he came from.
maybe this is where it came from.
He was counting the grains.
Maybe that's why they call him the Count. Like that's why they call him Count Dracula and stuff.
Oh, I never even thought of that. That's a good point.
Yeah, sometimes I make good points. It's probably really wrong.
Someone email us then and tell us that.
Yeah. They believed that the vampires could not resist counting the grain, which in today's society would be a form of OCD. Oddly enough, Europe wasn't the only ones that believed this. China, South America, and Indian cultures also have stories of vampires not being able to resist counting grains. So I thought that was interesting in the fact that, you know, what happens after counting? Did you put enough grains down?
Do you keep coming back? Have to come back like every night to put more down?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I'd be so mad if I was a vampire with OCD having to count grain all every night.
Right. So that's some ways to, you know, prevent one. So if you wanted to prevent one, put some grains down. If you don't know where a grave would be that you would be worried about, maybe just put some around your house.
Wait, do you think if a vampire was attacking and I had like a handful of grain and just threw it on the ground, he would stop attacking and just count the grain?
That's a interesting point by you.
I don't want to doubt, but someone else can.
Let's find a vampire and see how that works.
Okay.
So now let's get into the protection part. While vampires are known not to die of disease or other normal human deaths, there are a few ways you can protect yourself. And I'm going to, you know, get into that now, so you never die of a vampire attack. The most notable being that a wooden stake would be driven into the vampire's chest. I mean, how many times have we seen that on shows, movies, whatever, even just stories?
Oh, all the time. There's a really funny line, because I'm obsessed with Disney movies, in Hotel Transylvania, where the Count Dracula is walking with the human Johnny, and he's like, so you're really a vampire, so will you die if a wooden stake goes through your heart? And he goes, yeah, but who wouldn't?
That is true. The folklore most likely comes to light because people would drive a wooden stake into the chest of the recently deceased to keep them from rising. So it was kind of like, not to kill, but just if they became the undead, they couldn't rise because there was a stake keeping them, you know, in the ground.
That's also one really, really sure way to make sure that whoever you're burying is actually dead. Because if not, they are not.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. And I'm sure that happened. I'm sure were people that weren't dead and got, you know.
There was a case as recent as, I think, like 2004 in Greece, where they were going to bury someone and she, like, popped out of her coffin.
Whoa! That's crazy.
Yeah, so we'll have to do an episode on this because it gets pretty wild.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure you can, if you actually did some research, I'm sure that happens more than you think now.
Yeah, it's so creepy.
Well, some might think.
So put a wooden stake in your heart.
Well, some might think, well, wood? Shouldn't it be, you know, iron or silver? Wouldn't that work better? And you're probably correct, but you got to remember, this is the Middle Ages. Nobody has any money or anything to trade for, you know, silver, iron. So wood was readily available. So that's probably where the folklore comes from, just because it was just practical. Everybody used wood. But others think it's because wood is what was used to sacrifice Christ on. And, you know, the vampires are, you know, they don't like the wooden cross, anything that symbolizes Jesus Christ or God. So that's where some people might think the folklore comes from, because it was wood that was used to crucify Christ. So I, you know, you can probably used to both at the same time, but that's a couple examples why some scholars had to say about why wood was used and not any other material. Another way to kill a vampire would be decapitation and lighting it on fire. Just as in the witch trials, many cultures would decapitate and set fire to people they deemed to be a vampire. Can't be a vampire without a head or a body. Am I right?
Oh my God.
What up, Ashley?
I just pictured you going, like, am I right? And have your hands up. But how crazy is it that it's, like, people they just deem that are vampires? It's, like, there's no proof. There's no probably trial or anything. It's just, like, I don't like you. You're a vampire. You're set on fire.
I mean, we haven't done an episode on the witch trials yet. There's just so much information. I would love to do one, though. But a lot of the things that I read about it and listen to on other podcasts is, if, say, Ash, I didn't, not that I didn't like you, but I wanted your property, but I didn't have any money to buy it, I would just call you out and say, you're a witch, make up some proof, you'd be killed and I'd get your property. That was a
lot. Which is insane.
The reasons people would call somebody a witch.
So they have to be doing this to some people, vampires. I can only imagine.
Because like I said, in the Middle Ages, you have no money because you're ruled by a king who controls everything. So why wouldn't you just try to make your life a little bit easier for yourself and just claim everybody a vampire?
Yeah.
So those are ways to kill the vampire. Now let's kind of keep them. This is for, like, if they're attacking you right now and you're trying to, you know, just get them to go away. A very common trick is to use garlic. But how did that come to be? You know what I mean? Like, why garlic?
Oh, garlic. Yeah, it is very strange.
Yeah. Well, garlic was actually known to ancient Egyptians to have a special healing power. In Slavic regions, they used it to protect themselves, not just vampires, but also demonic forces. In Chinese cultures, they used to smear garlic on the foreheads of children, while in the Philippines, they would smear it under their armpits to keep evil entities away.
Ew.
So I think it just it evolves from the Egyptians saying it has magical healing powers. Well, probably the reason for belief, for that belief, is there is actually some credence to that. Even today, they know there's proof that garlic is very strong in antibiotics. When used properly, it can kill some infections. So, you know, they used garlic on an infection that they didn't really, you know, you don't know it's an infection, you don't know much in these times, but it helps cure it. Well, it must be magic. The belief then was that the powers of the garlic would kill whatever it was that made the deceased into a vampire. And it goes back to saying, like, it killed the infection. Well, they probably would believe that whatever made this person an undead, it would probably kill it off too. You know what I mean? So they were thinking, yeah, it must, whatever kills this to make it an infection must also kill everything else that they seem bad.
I mean, for being as long ago as this all was and came to be, it's actually really logical thinking.
And I actually did read that some scholars have the explanation for vampires, and they think it's rabies. Don't want to go out in the sunlight because you're sensitive. Garlic stinks. And when you have rabies, your senses are very overwhelm you. So they think that the smell of the garlic kind of, like, backed people off who had rabies. And then you see the foaming of the mouth, acting animalistic. So I thought that kind of made sense as well.
Yeah, I didn't even know that about if you have rabies, your senses were heightened. So yeah, that does make sense because garlic is potent. It is so strong. I mean, I love it on everything, but yeah. Like, you could definitely smell it on your hands for days.
Well, that's why you only use like a little bit of it and not like a whole thing of it, you know?
No, I use a whole jar. No vampires coming up in here.
Well, the other thing is about that explanation is that's what some scholars said, but in my research, the sunlight thing is only recent as the book Dracula in the late 1800s. So, I mean,
okay.
Maybe they were sensitive to sunlight. Maybe that was what it was. But the whole sunlight killing them is a more recent thing. So, I mean, I guess there's some still some research to do on where that came from. And if you know, please email us. I was only able to do a little bit of research this week since the whole quarantine thing got me a little busy at work. So,
well, maybe it's because, like, it's not that the sunlight will kill the vampires. They just don't come out in the sunlight. Like, how we interpret, okay, there's spirits and demons and stuff around us 24/7, but we don't ghost hunt at noon. We ghost hunt at midnight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we more associate spirits and things like that with the witching hour, which is like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. So that's probably it. And then it morphed into the Hollywood as the sunlight would kill them. I get that. That's a pretty good take on it. So that's a great way into the segment into this little part of this podcast is, you know, you might be wondering, well, Bill, we were always told sunlight and mirrors do the trick. Well, my young vampire hunters, that is all modern day garbage. The mirror trick or characteristic really wasn't mentioned until 1897 in Bram Stoker's Stoker's. I probably should have researched that before I came on this podcast. Anyway, Bram Stoker's Dracula. And as for the sunlight, it's not really found until the silent film Nosferatu. I really couldn't even find it, just like we mentioned before, any of these two traits in the folklore of the Middle Ages. But Ash, you brought up a great point with the witching hour and at night. You know, they told stories like this to keep kids inside and away and out from going out and about during the nighttime, because there was actual things killing us back then, like wolves and other animals, other people. So, you know, it was just another way of scaring people not to go out at night.
Yeah. So wait, what's the mirror trick? Are they just saying, I just thought vampires couldn't see themselves in reflection. So it's like,
From what I could find is they didn't like it, because if they were trying to kind of be incognito, they don't want to go next to a mirror because they would instantly be outed as a vampire.
Okay, so it doesn't hurt them.
It doesn't hurt them. It's more of a way of deflecting, like getting them away from you. Just like the garlic doesn't hurt them, they don't like it. The crucifix doesn't hurt them. They just don't like the sight of godly symbols, you know.
Okay, that makes sense.
So let's get into, I found this pretty interesting. There was actually types of vampires, and let me tell you something. There's hundreds of them, maybe even thousands of them. And to be honest with you, I don't have that time. So we're going to go over three of the main ones that I found throughout all these websites. If you get a chance, there are quite a few of them that are very interesting. They're fun reads, you know what I mean? The first one is the one that we all know in Sanguine. I think it's like genuine, but I can't.
I was going to say, you should say it like genuine.
Sanguine vampires. I know I butchered that, and I know someone's going to be all pissy about it.
It's the pony of vampires.
Yeah. But these are your typical vampires. They're the most well-known. They are known for drinking blood. Although it is not the blood itself they feed on, it's the life force they get from the blood. So it's not really the blood that keeps them alive. It's the life force that we... And I think that comes from they don't know much about the human body then. And, you know, you can't survive without your blood. So
your blood is your life source.
Yeah. So I think that's where it comes from. And that feeding of the blood helps them gain their strength that they need. The next one is a psychic vampire. I tried to do some research on this, and all I kept on getting was into like mental health, like third eye yoga stuff that they actually use people, they call people, actual people, psychic vampires who are always complaining and draining you because they're always around you complaining, pretty much just being a little bitchy.
Nancy's and Ned's.
Yeah. But I did find one that kind of fit the profile here. These vampires do not physically feed on their victims and can actually feed on one or more victims at once. Instead of drinking blood, they're able to drain the life force from their victims psychically, causing the people to become depressed and fatigued. So they're more of like
definitely psychic vampires out there.
Oh yeah. You know, they're in every one of our workplaces.
Yeah.
But they use more of your energy. So this is more of your, like, the energy you put off. So if you're like a happy-go-lucky type person and you're putting off a lot of positive energies, these vampires will be able to suck that life force out of you and drain you of everything. The next one is kind of the same thing, but it's called an empathetic vampire. And they feed off your emotion. So not so much as your energy, which is what you're always pretty much putting out, but, you know, your emotion, what you're feeling at that moment. And most believe that they feed off a lot of anger or sadness, but others believe they can feed off of any emotion that a person is portraying. So if your emotion is excited or is passionate, they can feed off of that, kind of draining you again.
Huh. That's kind of interesting that they're not really held to the stereotypical sad, depressing, anger kind of emotions. It's anything, but they can just drain it from you.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is all good and fun. But what good is it if vampires are not real, Ash? What good?
It's not good at all because we have a paranormal podcast, so they need to be real.
Yeah. So, well, my friends, pay attention. During the Middle Ages, our species went through many pandemics, just like we are now. You know, we're all quarantined. Yeah, you can't be within arm length of anybody else. But a lot of these symptoms of things like the Black Plague or rabies, like we talked about before, are similar traits of vampires. A symptom of rabies is being hypersensitive, just like we talked about before. This is actually one of the theories, I guess I jumped the gun here, but of the garlic being affected, the pungent smell. And actually, throughout histories, vampire tales are closely associated with disease-ridden areas. So when there's a pandemic that pops up, you can see that there's also a lot of folklore about vampires at the same time, kind of blaming vampires for the disease, or maybe people are having these reactions and these symptoms and they believe that they're vampires.
So the coronavirus was started from vampires.
Well, clearly. Someone ate that. I think. That's what I'm going with. And it also probably comes from people not understanding how the body decomposes, which also led to a lot of notion of vampires. While a person decomposes and their skin begins to shrink, the teeth and fingernails would appear to have grown.
Yeah, that's where you get the long, creepy hand nails. Yeah,
and your fingers look longer because they're skinnier, because your hand shrinks as well, you know?
Yeah.
The body would also start to leak a dark fluid from the mouth, appearing though as it's drinking blood.
Yeah, that's just all your insides coming out.
Yeah. So let's actually get into a couple quote unquote real vampires. And we're going to start off with Vlad. I don't know how they exactly say this, but it's Vlad the Third. Vlad III Dracula, or Vlad the Impaler.
They were some official, not official, never mind, I can't think of the word. Proper. Okay. They're very proper vampires.
Yes. So this is, I would say a lot of people know of this story. Not going to get into these stories too much because there is a lot of information out there. Vlad's surname, Dracula, literally means son of Dracul, and Dracul was derived from a Latin word meaning dragon or Draco. His father, Vlad II Dracul, was inducted into the Order of Dragon to help defend against the Ottoman Empire. Unfortunately, Vlad's father would have him and his younger brother sent to the court of Ottoman Empire as collateral to assure that Vlad's father would adhere to the Ottomans' rule, even though he was supposed to be defending against that. After being released and returning in 1448, Vlad would learn that his father and older brother were assassinated. Vlad at first took control of his father's seat, but after only 2 months, he was overthrown. It would be 8 years later before Vlad would once again reign as the leader. During this reign, he would commit the most heinous acts known to mankind. Vlad would impale his enemies on large stakes and would leave them there to die. These enemies were not only foreign factions, but also domestic enemies. It is said that he would leave these enemies in the open to deter any outside armies from attempting to invade his empire. Vlad ultimately was captured in 1462 and was released to gain back the seat in 1476. But that same year, he died in battle. And a lot of scholars actually believe that Bram's Dracula was inspired by the accounts of Vlad the Impaler. So the wooden stakes that he would leave these people on, leaving them impaled. I really couldn't
That's
find,
exactly where I'm from. That's crazy.
and I really couldn't find anything else that would associate it with that. I mean, there probably is if I had time to read a book about it. But there wasn't really any mention of drinking blood or anything. So, if you do know, please email us. I would love to get into that a little bit more. Maybe even do an episode on Vlad the Impaler, because it is a very
Absolutely.
interesting story.
It seems so intense just by that little story that you have here. And I mean, even though he's not drinking blood, you have to think of how much bloodshed that he had throughout his whole reign.
Yeah, and he's from that area that we associate Dracula from, you know.
Yeah.
He might not be from Transylvania, but I think it was said that his dad or something owned property in what is now known as Transylvania, and that's where Brom also used some liberties and put him in that area of Romania. But our next story, it kind of goes back to not knowing how a body decomposes. And it's actually pretty recent. Just over, I don't
Do the
know,
math.
130 years ago.
Long, long time.
Yeah, but it's the most recent, like an actual account of a quote unquote vampire. In 1892, in Rhode Island, one of the most well documented. Oh my God, I was saying this all day long and I was getting it right now. I can't say it. Exhumation.
Yeah.
Where they exhume a body. That's what I'm saying. Of a corpse that they turned into a banishment of the undead was that of Mercy Brown. I don't know if that sentence made any sense, but pretty much we're just saying this is a well-documented case of a possible undead in 1892. During the 1800s, the United States was hit with the tuberculosis epidemic. So we have another pandemic. The Brown family had been struck with tragedy. First, the mother died, then the eldest daughter died. And in 1891, Mercy Brown and her brother Edwin contracted the disease.
Oh,
Mercy ended
wow.
up dying from the disease in, I believe, late 1891. But Edwin remained alive for a short while longer. The community was certain that one of the family members was a vampire and caused Edwin to contract, and where he was sent away to Colorado to one of those springs remember on those ghost adventures where people would come from all over the place to go to those natural spring water places or mineral water places?
And that's what the Stanley Hotel was actually for, tuberculosis. They said the water and the air was set to heal there.
Yeah.
And so it was actually a hospital before it was a hotel.
So when he left, he must have looked fairly healthy. But when he came back, he looked awful. So a lot of the townsfolk blamed that on a vampire sucking his energy, because there was folklore around the time that a vampire would consume the life from the living dead, even if from underground, to get their strength to become a vampire. After some convincing, George Brown gave permission for his family to be exhumed. On March 17th, 1892, the bodies of his wife and eldest daughter were exhumed and were found to be pretty much skeletons, because there it was a few years since their death. However, when the body of Mercy was exhumed, she looked fairly normal. But you also got to remember, it's only been like 6 to 8 months. And she died and was buried when it was still cold out. Well, when she was exhumed, they also found blood in her heart and liver, which fueled the folklore. How can she have this in her heart and her liver if she's not alive? Well, remember I just mentioned, she only died, you know, maybe 9 months prior. And she was also buried in harsh winter conditions. And I don't even think she was buried in the ground. I think she was buried in like a tomb, or like, what's the word?
Mausoleum.
A crypt?
Yeah.
So she actually froze. Well, March is when things start to unfreeze. The town demanded that her heart and liver be burned before she was reburied. So they did. They burned her heart and her liver. Not only did they do that, they threw that in a little concoction and fed it to Edwin.
Ew.
As you can imagine, that did not work, and he ultimately died from the disease.
Ew. Like, these are not good idea, people. Put ashes in concoctions.
This one, I really hope there's a lot of information out there. I think we can get into this. I just didn't have time to get more into it. But if there is, if anybody knows a book about this, please send it to me. We will do one on this, because this is pretty good. Elizabeth Bathory was born into Hungarian nobility in 1560. She was known to have fits of rage, probably because of all the torture her father's officers did in front of her. There's a story she witnessed a thief get sewn into the stomach of a dying horse and left there to die. Could you imagine that? That's probably like the worst way I've ever heard anybody dying.
Yeah.
Historians have found that the... What's that?
That poor horse?
Right? Ugh. Historians have found that the Countess would torture her servants, especially the females, by driving needles through their lips and fingernails, or leaving them naked in the snow and then pouring water on them to lead them to freeze to death. There is one count that she beat a servant so bad with a club for stealing her pear that they mentioned that they had to wash her clothes. And I was like, well, usually that's going to happen whenever you beat somebody in general. But she got this for stealing a pear. And then she was stabbed to death with a pair of scissors.
Jeez, that's crazy.
The legend has it that she would actually take a bath in her victim's blood. And this would lead to, obviously, rumors of her being a vampire. Her belief was that the blood baths would keep her skin looking younger and healthier for her husband, who was, I believe, one of the officers, and he was out all the time, so he was never home.
She's actually not too far off with this. There's a lot of beauty regimens, and I know a lot of the stars do it, and you see it on like their Instagram. But there's like blood masks or like acupuncture with the blood. I know Kim Kardashian had one, and I hate referencing her, but it was basically she had like all these blood droplets, and it was called a blood mask because it's supposed to have good nutrients. I don't know if it, I'm hoping it was her own blood because it'd be weird if it was not.
That'd be very weird, but maybe she's a vampire.
Maybe.
In 1610, her own cousin led a raid on her castle in which they found dead bodies and they found prisoners awaiting certain death or to become her victims. Her officers were put to trial, but she never was. During one testimony of the officers, it was said that she would keep record of her victims, which they said totaled over 650.
Damn.
Even though she was never put to trial, she was walled into her room, only leaving enough room for air and food to pass through. She would then spend 4 years of her life living like this. I'm sorry, she would then spend the last 4 years of her life living like this, and she died in 1614.
Whoa, that's basically solitary confinement.
Yeah. So I hope I can find some more information on that. But it was a long time ago, so I don't know how much information is left. But it's a pretty interesting story. And they called her the Blood Countess. So I don't know if she counts any grains or anything, but I thought that was pretty interesting. I couldn't really find... The funny thing is, there was all this information about vampires associated with the Middle Ages, but there was I could not find like a good folklore. You know what I mean? Like the werewolf of such and such, or the witch of whatever, you know, like the Bellwitch Tower or the Bellwitch, yeah. Bellwitch Tower. You know what I'm talking about. We did an episode on
it. Yeah. And I think it's just because it's really starts from, you know, them not knowing how bodies decompose and then trying to scare kids. And it gets passed from culture to culture. So it's not really no one origin site of it. It's,
yeah,
a little bit of everybody.
So Ashley, that's my little episode on vampires. So
that was creepy. It was really good.
Yeah. Oh.
So guys, if you have some vampire stories or vampire inputs, I'm sure we're going to be posting some vampy stuff. So check out our social media, Instagram, don't_go_in_there. Twitter is don't_go_in_there3. Check out our Facebook page and join the group. Don't go in there. And send us all your true crime, paranormal, vampire, hometown, whatever you want to send to us at don'tgointhere19@gmail.com.
And of course, remember, check us out on Anchor, anchor.fm. I believe there is also an app where you can catch other podcasts as well. Not just us. Let us know how we sound this week. We have had some, you know, reviews that we weren't sounding that great. I know we had a few episodes though, Ash. Remember when we were recording together, I was accidentally recording with my computer audio, not our microphones.
Yes. So trying to get it all.
Please let us know. We're trying to get this up and running the best way we can. So your input is vital to us. We appreciate it. Then also subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever else you listen. Throw us a review if you can. And that way you will always be updated on new episodes from us.
Yes. And if you can, check out our Patreon. It has three different levels that you can support us financially on. Just a little tiny, tiny monthly donation to help us keep making new episodes and getting new content for you guys. So jump on over there and check it out. In each level, you get a nice little reward. So let us know.
Awesome. So, Ashley, you have anything else?
That is it for this week.
All right. Well, until next week, guys, remember, don't go in there.